Welcome to the Tuesday Talk Show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for joining us. First of all, a little programming note. Once again, we will resume our candidate interviews tomorrow. That's Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday this week. Each day we expect and have confirmed that there will be four candidates in each and every day in order to keep you informed and make sure that you make an intelligent vote on this coming election day. So that's coming up Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of this week. That will complete it, and I think the ballots come out on about the 15th. So you'll be prepared. And that's our goal here, is to keep you informed and pass along all the information that we possibly can. All that information today coming from city staff here in the studio. And if you have a question or comment for city staff today, the number to call is 541-472-1270. We ask that you hold your phone calls until after the top of the hour news coming up in about 24 minutes. So please keep that in mind. The number 541-472-1270. When you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live. Just like we have this gentleman right now who is flying solo today. I don't know if he can handle this or not. City Manager Aaron Kubik in studio. Aaron, glad to have you with us this morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Everybody bailed on you this morning. Is that what happened?
We've been really busy. We've got an all public works training right now and some other things going on that they said, Aaron, we just can't help you out today. We got it. So yeah. I am solo.
All right. Tell me about this public works training.
Yeah, we are, it's all public works training. We're doing this throughout the whole organization. It's an organizational issue. We are having the public works meet with our HR department, our human resources department. So they have a good understanding of all the things that HR can provide to all of our colleagues when it comes to all the benefits, healthcare, employee assistance programs, financial assistance that is all there. So it's just an opportunity for us to get together, talk about our values, talk about the organization, and also how our HR department, who serves our organization, can help serve our colleagues the best.
All right, talk about some of the benefits provided. Is that what I understood?
Yeah. Yep.
Including insurance. I know rates are going crazy right now, and there's a mass upheaval in the insurance industry. Is that going to cost the city more or less, or how does that work?
Yeah, we have a benefits committee that works through that on an annual basis and goes through and tries to find the best price possible for insurance. And you're right, the insurance costs have been going up. They are keeping up with or advance of inflation. We've been really good with regards to being able to negotiate good contracts to keep those costs down. I don't know what this year might look like when we go out and look at that. Part of that also is our experience and what we're experiencing from a healthcare providing perspective within the organization. If we're extremely healthy, then our insurance costs are lower. And that's why we have a number of different opportunities and programs that our colleagues can take advantage of and utilize to keep a healthy lifestyle. We assist with, say, for instance, health club membership or something along those lines. It's really important to make sure that we've got good ergonomic practices across the organization, and that's something that we talk to all of our colleagues about and make sure that the keyboards are at the right height and that, you know, we've got the right chairs. And because when you have that repetitive work, whether it be out in the field or it be in an office setting, we need to make sure that we're taking care of our bodies and that we're creating a good work environment for that.
Right, sitting at a computer for hours, and we do that here too, as a matter
of
fact. And I'm not just picking you in the city, because I know this is industry-wide. We're meeting, as a matter of fact, in a couple of weeks with our insurance representative here at the radio station, folks on Medicare. That's changing at the beginning of the year, so everybody is probably aware of what you're going through right now. Does age enter into a factor when you're finding out where your rate's going to be in an organization like the city?
No, not really. It's really our use and you know how that looks, and that's why it's important for us to make sure that we have a healthy workforce. It's what we use that the insurance companies take a look at. So and we have done a good job of keeping a safe work environment for all of our colleagues.
Oh, all right. Well, interesting. That's just a tangent.
Yeah.
We weren't expecting today to find out how the city works, and some of the things that you're going through is what everybody is probably going through this time or will by the end of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Elsewhere, of course, the city's always in the news right now for that same situation, the homeless situation.
Mm-hmm.
Have we completed a move yet, or is that move going to happen from A over to 7th Street for that designated campground, or are we going to keep both?
That's a nice, that's a great question, because if you drive up and down 6th Street, you'll notice that it looks like it's still being actively used, and it is being actively used. So council did pass that resolution last Wednesday. So that was almost a week ago. And the way we have our rule set up is that individuals can rest in those places for a week at a time. So we recognize that once council passed that resolution, we had the 7th Street location that was up and running and ready to go. That is a blank piece of property that's right next to the police station on 7th Street. So we've done something similar that we've done on 6th and A, and you may have noticed that if you drive up 7th Street, there is some fencing, and there are now some porta potties and hand washing stations and some other services there on next to the police station. What we'll be doing is, the 6th and A Street, along with the J Street site, though, that were originally, identified as two resting locations, were both from day one, temporary in nature. And we knew the 6th and A site was even more temporary than J Street. J Street individuals will need to likely have a new location identified. This winter would be appropriate, and we're going to be working on that at a council level. We will have a workshop discussion on that in the future, but we will be building the water treatment plant, and all of that starts in May. So we have to have an alternative site for individuals to be able to rest on J Street. That is a larger location, so we'll need to make sure that we match the needed space for the use. So that's going to be one of the things we're going to be looking at. But getting back to the 6th and A Street site, we needed to give the individuals resting there the week notice, and then after that, they will be required to start to move out and go to either the 7th Street site or another location or the J Street site.
All right. So we have basically two locations that we're making them rotate to and from the 7th Street to the J Street, and the A Street is still being eliminated.
Yeah, and so right now we're technically operating three sites, and that's going to happen, and that could happen multiple times throughout the year depending on what happens. We may need to respond to emergency where maybe there's a water main break right next to one of the sites, and it creates an issue, and so we'll need to make sure that we have alternative locations if we need to stand up something quickly. 6th and A might be that spot. We also have some other spots that we may need to consider if that's the situation. 6th and A was the temporary location chosen until 7th Street was ready to go. Now, 7th Street needed a couple of things. It had an encumbrance on it. It had a house on it, which I heard was haunted. But so I don't know what's happening with the ghosts now on that site.
You have evicted the ghosts?
We couldn't find them.
Does the ACLU know this?
We couldn't find them to give them the eviction notice. So we just laid it down and left. We weren't quite sure what to do with the notice for the ghost. But yes, we did hear that the attic was haunted in that old house.
I see.
But we did tear that down, and then we needed to do some site work, and we did the site work, and we had that set up. That took about, you know, a month and a half. So in the meantime, we had the 6th and A Street open as the temporary site. And so I'm guessing that you'll probably see the fencing and the services that are on that site come down probably a week from now or so.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on it. We can't help but keep an eye on it. It's right there on me.
It is. Yeah. And the 7th Street one is relatively visible also.
It's visible going up 7th Street just before you get to the police station there.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, right now when it's vacant, it looks pretty good compared to the haunted house that was there before.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
So, all right, we'll take the good with the bad, or the good with the questionable might be a better way to face it right
now.
Yeah. Let me go into another direction here right now. The way the rules are set up in terms of time, place, and manner of resting in these designated areas means that after a certain period, and I think, what is it, a week's notice, and then 72 hours, then they have to move. And there's some question about making people move right now.
Yeah,
is that something you can comment on right now?
Well, let me try to clarify. You know, we were operating under an injunction when we also had to allow them to do a couple of things. One, they had to rest in the parks. Mm-hmm. They had the opportunity to rest in all parks except for Reinhardt Volunteer Park. They were able to rest for approximately a 12-hour period of time, which was like 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. in essence. It changed briefly in the summertime, wintertime, but it was basically a 12-hour time. To where, in theory, they would rest. They'd be able to rest for those 12 hours. Then they would pack their tent up and move along or spend their day doing whatever they needed to do. And then they could rest again in that 12-hour shift. That's sort of what the injunction said. Then along came the state of Oregon, and the state of Oregon also required 72-hour notice. So that extended the 12-hour rest period to 72 hours technically, because we needed to provide 72 hours notice for those tents to, before they were removed. So we were operating under the injunction, and we also came up with new policy to, because we did win the Supreme Court case, and the Supreme Court case allowed us to determine our own path when it comes to managing resting in public spaces. But the state of Oregon still had House Bill 3115, which stated that we needed to implement time, place, and manner regulations to allow individuals to find a location and have a location that is objectively reasonable to rest. Council identified our policy as an opportunity to where we would not call out our parks or public right-of-ways as areas where people can rest. And to be objectively reasonable, we went down a path of identifying sites that they can rest, which then is objectively reasonable to say you can't be in a park, but you can go here. So there is a location for them to go. That's where we came up with the two temporary sites at the time, J Street and 7th Street, and then the super temporary site, which was 6th and A Street. A few weeks into that program, council did make a small policy change to allow for to allow for 7 days of resting in the park. So now we have the 7 days of resting in the park, along with the 72-hour notice that is still in existence with the state of Oregon, where individuals can rest in the two identified locations that we have established, and whatever those may be in the future, because they're definitely not going to be where they are right now over the long run. We do need to come up with more of a permanent solution in the future. So the way it works is we do provide an opportunity, and there's a lot of officer discretion also. It could be due to weather. Is it super rainy outside? Is it snowing outside? What are the conditions? So there is some discretion that is utilized by our enforcement team and our community response team when it comes to moving individuals. But they are all provided the same type of notices where after 1 week's time, they recognize that they need to move to a new location, at least for a day, and then they can come back and rest again for a 7 day period.
All right. I think it's the making the move that has come into question here. And is there another lawsuit on the horizon that we picked up some information from, or are you aware of any of that yet?
You know, I don't know what the horizon says in the future. There could always be lawsuits with whatever it is. Anyone can file a tort claim against a municipality. So I can't anticipate that really. I can tell you that we as a city are doing things different than we were under the injunction, and it's from even a more service-minded perspective. When we were operating under the injunction, individuals were supposed to move every 12 hours, basically, or 24 hours. The state required then 72 hours notice, and that was operating for 4 years. So we were operating for 4 years under the injunction and under state law. People were moving, and we were getting compliance, utilizing officer discretion, utilizing the local service providers. We were not having any major issues with individuals, no matter what their physical or mental state is, to be in compliance with the need to move to a location. That was not an issue when was not brought up as a big issue, because the community was working together to make that happen. We're not doing anything different from a community response team standpoint. We're serving the same individuals. We're treating them with the same respect and being very fair and reasonable and utilizing the discretion in order to gain compliance. We've actually made it easier and extended the time frame for them resting from the injunction. So from 1 week now. So from the standpoint of the city, we're treating and we're utilizing our codes and our enforcement and officer discretion in the field no different than we were four years ago and up to 4 years ago.
All right. Aaron, it seems like we have been talking about this for over 5 years.
Yeah, it has been. It's been a long journey.
And we're not done with that journey yet.
No.
We'll continue with this, but I do have to pay some bills. We'll be right back.
At Grover.
Welcome back, everyone. City Manager Aaron Kubik in studio today for the Tuesday Talk Show. Once again, if you want to jot down those phone numbers to use in about 15 minutes, it's 541-472-1270. Of course, like we have been for years, we're still talking about the homeless situation. That seems to be the big topic that's concerning most of the citizens around here, and that's why we keep going back to it, because it seems to be evolving. Now, we've established these parking, camping areas, these rest areas, by the city. Are these now going to be, or are we going to be required in perpetuity to provide this forever and ever?
Well, that's a question that I'm not sure if I have the ability to answer because of the way the landscape might change in the future. There's been some discussion of re-looking at House Bill 3115 that required the time, place, and manner regulations, and doing some work on that and making some modifications.
So that's at the state level we're talking about.
Yeah, there's some discussions at the state level of making that happen to make some changes to benefit the whole community, the individuals that need areas to rest, plus the communities that are providing the services and the community partners that are providing the services. So I see that the landscape from a policy perspective might change, so it's hard for me to answer that question. If it stands the way it is, then there will always be a need for the city to have time, place, and manner regulations associated with people resting in the park that are objectively reasonable. Each community defines objectively reasonable, and I say that, those two words, time and time again, because that's technically what's in the policy. That's what's in the ORS is objectively reasonable. So each objectively reasonable does not have a very clear black and white definition. It is subjective. So each community defines what that is.
Here, it could be completely different between Cave Junction and Grants Pass.
Totally could be.
Grants Pass and Medford. Grants Pass, Medford and Bend. Everyone could be doing something different.
Yeah, and you see that across the board, across the state. People are doing things different. The one thing that they have in common is there are services for individuals and or areas for individuals to rest that need the ability to rest. But that looks different in most communities. Here in Josephine County, we've got a little extra struggle, especially for the city of Grants Pass, in determining what's objectively reasonable, because some of our community partners in the city and the county are, I would say, not as fully developed as some of our neighboring communities, like in Jackson County and Douglas County, with, say, for instance, Rogue Retreat, and with UCAN servicing Roseburg, Rogue Retreat servicing, helping be a service provider for Jackson County, and how they have stood up different resting and or camping sites for individuals, shelter sites, really, and navigation sites. We're gearing up for that. And I think one of the things that sort of stifled our growth compared to some of the other communities is the injunction. We were held under an injunction that said we had to do what we had to do until that was cleared up. So that sort of put a freeze on some of the development, I think, from that perspective. Now what we're trying to do, and I've already met with UCAN and with Rogue Retreat. I did that last week and had conversations with their CEOs and their directors to sort of talk about their programs, what they're doing, what our next steps might be. Because what we have right now is providing an area to rest. And let me start, let me also state here in this situation is that some people are struggling with the sites that we have, whether it be individuals or neighbors that are around there or something along those lines and the potential impacts. I can tell you the policy that council implemented when we implemented this policy, and we identified we needed to identify sites, and then we also stated that there weren't going to be rusting in the parks in public right of way, was probably one of the most successful policies that have been adopted in years. If you notice, a week after council adopted those policies, the landscape changed in our parks and right of way. That was one of the most successful policies that I've seen. It's neat when you see things happen. Now, was there fallout? Is it perfect? No. And that's some of the stuff that we have to work through right now, and we're working through right now. This is, we're learning and growing from this. You know, I'm not trained in running shelter services, and we don't have anyone on staff that's trained in running shelter services. So we are going to try to heavily rely on those nonprofits and those service providers to help us move forward. One of the things that I think is key that we have to do is we have to have a shared vision of what we want out of this. What do we want and what do we need as a community out of this? Council initially said what we need to free up our public spaces, and we are doing that through time, place, and manner regulations. We identify two spots. There we go. Now, what we're hearing we need to start talking about livability things and services that are provided. So if this is the vision, if this is the direction and the goal that we need to have a shared vision and goals with the community in order for us to accomplish this. This is not something the city can do as an island. We definitely need the support of the community in order to move forward, but we also need to identify and define what our shared goals are.
Does managed campground enter into this conversation? And how do you go about that? Is that going back to the nonprofits?
I think it is. And it's a model that works everywhere else. The model is not that a municipality handles a managed campground. You don't see that. You see it that it's the nonprofits that are in partnership with municipalities that operate the managed campgrounds. And those nonprofits have already a good network when it comes to funding opportunities to help fund. And all the different, there's so many different revenue streams that can come in to help with that those nonprofits are already geared up on that. They're already in that web. And so they have that knowledge and information at their fingertips.
All right. There is so much more to ask and so much more to talk about here. And we could go on for a long time.
Sure.
But we'll probably continue after the news. However, right now, the news is coming up and up against a hard break here on KAJO Radio. Just real quickly, once again, we will be resuming those political interviews tomorrow. We have four candidates coming in beginning at 9:35 in this same time slot. That's happening tomorrow right here on KAJO Grants Pass, Oregon. Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show continues here on KAJO Radio. Brief programming note once again. We will continue with our candidate interviews tomorrow. We have four scheduled in on each day, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Pardon me. Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of this week. So when you cast that ballot, you'll be informed and can make the wise choice. And we appreciate that choice that you make every year. In the meantime, though, the number to call here if you have a question or comment for our guest, City Manager Aaron Kubik, it's 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you air your question or comment in person. In the meantime, Mr. Kubik, of course, our conversation for years has been about the homeless situation here, and we continue. Now, we've got the 2.5 campsites available right now.
Yeah.
That works.
Yeah.
In the meantime, though, I'm under the impression that within these campgrounds, there are basically two different societies, people who are not there by choice but by necessity, and other people there, and that might be the unsavory element that that really makes the news. And how does that affect, first of all, our law enforcement? And is it better now than it was when they were in the parks? What's the situation with Chief Hensley and his crew?
So, yeah, our community response team is still out there serving the community, doing the same thing with the same mission and goals in mind. The two sites have condensed things, so they're still out in the parks, and we're still you know, patrolling the parks and those kind of things. But when it comes to conduct that is against our codes and in violation of things, we are still enforcing that, and in the parks and in these resting locations that we have. So, it makes it easier for our community response team and the outreach that we have when it comes to mental health and drug addiction services a little easier because we're not traveling, or at least more efficient because they're in more centralized location. So from that perspective, it has been a positive from a time perspective that there's individuals there. And our community response team is not just about enforcement. We really do have an arm with community partners that are associated with trying to get individuals a hand up and talking to them about mental health and drug addiction issues and trying to get them services that will help them in the long run.
Now, the J Street site is monitored, as I understand it. We have an electronic device there with what, video and sound. I'm not sure what all it is available. How effective has that been? Do we have a gauge on that?
Well, it's hard to gauge that because I don't know how you'd get the data to gauge how cameras work, but we do have a camera trailer. It's a camera trailer that we purchased, and it is similar to those camera trailers where if you go into parking lots of big stores, I know, say, for instance, I remember seeing one in Target when I was in Medford last or something, and it's got a blue flashing light on the top, and there's, it's a camera trailer, and that's basically what we have at the J Street site. We thought it was important to have a camera there and to monitor activities. And it's not like we have individuals staring at the cameras all day long, but it provides an opportunity for us to be able to track the activities that are going on there. And if something does occur or arise, we have the ability to take a look at the footage and see exactly what caused the issue.
There's still several questions that come back from that, but I'm not sure that it's going to be productive to go any further with this. And you be my guide here. Has it been utilized so far? Has it been effective? Is there any gauge of what it's provided for you so far?
Well, in general, if you look at the data associated with cameras and having cameras in locations, they're usually very effective. They're effective as an enforcement tool to be able to take a look at what truly occurred or happened in a certain situation. And they're also have been shown to be effective as a prevention tool. Because
a deterrent.
Deterrent. Mm-hmm. Because people understand that there are a set of eyes, whether it's even though it's not a human, it's a camera. And that camera is watching everything that's going on. And so that does help as a deterrent also. So, and that's why we thought it was important to have one at our larger site. That'll be likely something that we'll continue to do, whether however we move forward.
It's mobile. It can be moved to wherever the need be.
You bet. Yeah, it's like those mobile speed trailers. It's just a little single axle, and we just throw it on the back of one of our vehicles and tow it away. So, yeah, it works great. And we think that that's a positive tool, and it's been in place there, and I think it's serving well.
All right, let's move ahead a little bit, because one of the ways to alleviate homelessness is to provide homes.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is our situation here? First of all, let's talk about the Parker site, and I don't know if the city has anything to do with that anymore, because they were going to put in 17 little structures behind that right next to Bi-Mart, fenced off to provide for the people who really need physically a place to stay.
Yeah.
Has that happened? Is there a delay there?
Yeah, that program is being headed by a nonprofit called Mint.
Right.
And so they're taking the lead on that, and they do have, and they did have plans to put 15 or 20 or so of those pallet shelters for individuals to be able to rest. And so it is a process that they need to go through, but we will be partnering with them as they work through that.
Are there any holdups right now? Because I know this has been on the plan for a long time, and I still don't think there are any structures back there. Is the holdup on the part of the city or Mint or funding, or do you know?
Yeah, it's just Mint with their own internal planning and making sure that they're able to do the services that they need to at the right time. So that's really a Mint question. But from our perspective, from a permitting perspective, we can assist them through that process.
Now, 15 or 17 or what, however many structures, that's just a drop in the bucket compared to what we need. What's the home, not the homeless situation, but the housing situation in Grants Pass moving forward right now?
That's a great question. I was looking at some of the data that earlier this week, and was really impressed with what the city has done to help partner with the private sector and incentivize private investment when it comes to affordable housing. There's a number of projects that really add up to big numbers when it comes to affordable housing infrastructure. I'm just going to throw some out here because I made a list to bring them in because I was quite impressed if you actually look at the list. We have some ARPA grants, those federal dollars that came down, $747,000 of ARPA dollars to incentivize a much larger investment from the private sector to create 20 ownership opportunities for individuals at a low rate. So that's 20 homes right there that are going to be on the market that are going to be more affordable. We have Hillcrest Veterans Village. That is where we're provided another ARPA grant of $800,000 to incentivize private investment that's much larger than that for 36 rental units. So now we're already up to 56. And then we've got Allen Creek Crossing. Allen Creek Crossing is another great unit where we provided $3 million for them, and that was some ARPA dollars also. It was a big ticket item, and that's one where Josephine and Jackson County Housing Authorities are working together, and we're going to have 68 units there. So that's another big win for us, and we're already up to 124 homes just out of those three projects. There's some other ones, Cathedral Square, which is another partnership with the Housing Authority of Jackson County. We've provided $370,000 with assistant development charge grants for additional 56 units. So we're now up to 180 new structures for affordable housing and people to have affordable housing ownership opportunities. It doesn't stop there of what we've been doing lately. We have a construction excise tax grants and some housing opportunities where there's a project called Nebraska Trails. Nebraska Trails has 51 units that are going in. What we've done is we've taken and we're providing them with $240,000 worth of grant funds to incentivize that private investment. So that's another big win for us. So now we're up to 231 homes. And again, it continues. Allenwood Homes, we provided that's going to provide us with another 20 homes, so we're up to 251 homes, and we did another $250,000 grant for that. We have our Urban Renewal Agency, another pot of money. So we've been utilizing three pots of money here. We've been utilizing ARPA dollars. We've been utilizing our construction excise tax dollars. We've been utilizing our Urban Renewal Agency dollars. Urban Renewal Agency has provided $749,000 to incentivize private investment of 20 opportunities for 20 homes, 20 new homes that will provide opportunities for people to afford a new home that have not had an opportunity to do so before. So now we're up to 271 homes. And then the big one is Allenwood Affordable, our Allenwood project. That's a city project that we've initiated. We own some land, and we are focusing on getting 113 additional units into this subdivision that we're creating. And so that's another huge win for us. And that puts us at 384 homes, or up to 300 to 406, depending on what the plan development is. But basically, 406 homes are coming online because of the city, either through some reduction in land sales or through grants. We're talking, we've put in $6.1 million to help with affordable housing.
The great news there is I was keeping up with you on the number count, and when you get into high math, my eyes roll back in my head, but I have over $6 million.
Yes.
Or for 340 units.
Yeah.
How many of those units are under construction right now? Do you know?
So a lot of these, like I said, this is relatively new stuff. Mm-hmm. Some of them, the land work is starting to be done, et cetera. The homes are still waiting to come online, but we have that many in the queue that are going to be built. And that's just a huge project. Say, for instance, our city project, which is the big one at 130 units, the Allenwood Affordable Housing one, we're in the planning stages of that. And so that won't come online for, you know, I'm thinking 2 years. But okay. The fact is that those kind of things do take time. But we're making forward progress.
The very first 20 that you mentioned on your list there.
Yeah.
Is that underway yet? Do we have a shovel in the ground?
Yeah, the Fruitdale, there's some work being done at the Fruitdale with the ARPA grants that we provided for $747,000.
Okay, and the veterans one that you mentioned right after that.
Yeah, there's been a lot of work there. I don't
was
going to
say that one's
it.
Underway,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of work that's already been done on that one.
Yeah. Okay, we know that it takes time to put these things in progress here. And when we say low-income or moderate-income housing, what kind of price ranges are we talking? What will it take to get into one of these? Is it just my particular situation? Do I need a big down payment? If the vice president gives me 25 grand, will that do it?
Yeah, right. Well, that's sort of difficult for me to say because, as I mentioned, the partners through all of these groups that I said will have different criteria associated with what it takes in order to utilize one of these homes and get into that. So I can't answer that because that's too numerous. Each one is different, whether it be home bridging or whether it be the housing authority. They all have their own guidelines that need to follow with regards to low and moderate income individuals and what their salary needs to be annually in order to be able to take advantage of these programs.
Well, I'm not sure we've solved any problems today, but we certainly outlined one, the homeless situation and the housing situation as it stands in Grants Pass right now. Golly, do you deal with anything else, Aaron?
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Every once in a while, something else will sneak in.
All right. Well, we'll sneak something in when we come back right after this important message.
What does being a nonprofit?
Welcome back. Well, I don't know if we're clean and dry here, but we're certainly fast here, and we can, we've got a lot to get in the last 7 or 8 minutes that we've got left here. And it seems like forever we've been talking about these same two topics. And off mic, you were just outlining to me how you didn't expect to be dealing with these kinds of situations 5 or 6 years ago. None of us were. But there are other areas that the city is busy into and that you have to keep track of. What are you hearing about from, first of all, your bosses, the council, the mayor, and your constituents out there? What are you dealing with on a daily basis to keep the people happy?
Well, there's a lot of other projects that we're working on that are going to be fun and exciting and going to continue to build community within Grants Pass. And one is the pool. We've had good discussions about the pool, and council has a unified vision on what that pool might look like and what amenities it might provide. So we get to start moving forward with the design and looking at what that might look like. And that's going to be an exciting project for us to work on. It's always neat to have projects that the community can utilize and that helps with the quality of life. We've got the downtown plaza that we're making great progress on, and that'll be coming in front of council here shortly also. And that's going to be a great thing. We just had our Along the Rogue. We talked about it last month.
That was my next question is, do we have an evaluation of how it went?
You know, I don't have any numbers yet, because James, who was, you know, taking a big lead on this, had a conference Monday and Tuesday and today. So haven't had a chance to really, sit down and have a debrief on how that's gone. I did hear the vendors had a great day on Sunday and they all did really well from a business perspective, which is great. You know, it was great. The artwork was wonderful. I was down there looking around at stuff had lunch and listened to some music, and a good time was had by all. The weather was wonderful. It was just the right temperature. It was great.
Great fall weather we've got right now.
But those kind of events are things that really bolster the quality of life and bolster the economy and just our community spirit. And the plaza is going to be part of that also, because it'll provide an opportunity for more of those type of events and activities to happen, and it'll make it easier for those individuals that are putting those on. We have a Main Street program that is starting up and really, really going gangbusters, and I can see a Main Street program really doing some wonderful things for the downtown area. I know we've got a great partnership right now with the city, our economic team, with James and Dana and the downtown merchants, and to have a Main Street program associated with that also will be a multiplying factor on success for downtown Grants Pass.
I hear a lot of optimism, and the only negatives I hear we've been dealing with for 45 minutes before we get to this part of the show where we talk about some good things. in your vision, what's the future look like for Grants Pass in terms of the plaza and the downtown areas? Our downtown area seems to be thriving where a lot of other cities, it's not.
Yeah, we do. We've got some, and it does thrive and it does a great job because we have some great entrepreneurs and merchants that care, have a passion. We've got a great community that supports those businesses downtown. And the city of Grants Pass, I think, is a good partner in trying to help them be successful through either streamlining our permitting processes or providing unique grants and opportunities, whether it be a storefront lighting grant or a sprinkler system grant or a facade improvement grant. That all helps clean up and make things better for the downtown merchants and the people visiting the downtown. We have, I think, on the horizon in the future for Grants Pass. I'm actually extremely excited about the next five. I think if we coin it in a 5-year period of what can happen with Grants Pass, we've already got some things that I already can talk about and we know. We've got the pool, we've got the plaza, we've got the band shell at Riverside Park. We've got things that are going to, I think, it'll be coming back from an activities perspective, and the parks are going to be utilized more for community events, and I think that's awesome. There are also some other, I would classify them as catalyst type of opportunities within the next 5 years that the city Grants Pass could potentially capitalize, which can be a game changer in the city and making us even better than ever when it comes to providing great quality of life for our residents and our visitors.
Oh, you got to give me a hint.
I can tell you some of it exists with trying to make our urban renewal agency as productive as possible and getting some focus on where we need to spend our money and having a real plan on our urban renewal agency. That'll be a catalyst, I think, to help with a couple of huge projects I'm just really excited about.
Oh, I'd like to explore that further, but right now I got to tell you, I've got about two and a half minutes
okay.
for you. Right
okay.
There.
I would love it if I can just real quick. Look, we do so much within the community, and I say we, it's the community as a whole, but the city of Grants Pass does a lot, and the city council is always looking for assistance, and they get assistance through their advisory committees. I just want to read through really quick here. We've got some great advisory committees, and I've got some openings that we'd love to have you fill.
Well, fill it up.
Our Urban Tree Advisory Committee, we've got two positions open. Our Historical Buildings and Sites Commission, we've got an opening. Our Housing Advisory Committee, we have two openings. Our Tourism Advisory Committee, we have an opening. Our Sustainable Energy and Action Committee, we have an opening. Our Budget Committee, we have two openings. Our Committee on Public Art, we have two openings. Our Housing Advisory Committee, we have one opening. Those are all great, great advisory committees that provide good recommendations to council to make informed decisions on policy. If you have a passion for any of those things that I said, please look us up on the web. Give us a call. The applications are there. We'd be more than happy to get you in the queue to apply for one of these positions.
Once again, how do we do that? And give me some numbers.
450-6000. Give us a call or grantspassoregon.gov. It's on the web and it's all ready to go for you.
All right. Thank you very much, City Manager Aaron Kubik. We thank you for your time today. We always appreciate you coming in. Once again, thank you for your time and your effort and your expertise in these matters. You've been listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO.